Have you ever known anyone that has gamed the system? Or I think we actually, I'm not even going to say that. I think we all have friends, and I want you to start thinking about your friend that loves to game the system. And what I mean by that is that they always think that there is a way around the system. Like, in all parts of our life, there are systems, right? There are, and God, and Proverbs is all about this, skillful living, right? So there's this idea that there's the creator and the creation, and the creator created with order. And the way to live skillfully is to study the order in which the creator created, and then we can apply the principles to have a good life, or that will improve the outcome of our life. But there are always people that are trying to game the system. So for an example, work. There are people that don't want to work. In fact, I've known some people that have put more effort into being lazy than actual work, you know? So like if they had just applied the same amount of effort into their work, they would have been better off. And so for example, in college, we had this friend. I just absolutely loved the guy. He was super creative, but he didn't want to work. And so one summer, he decided that he was going to buy raffle tickets. And so he got this huge roll of raffle tickets, right? And he thought that if he just went for 1 week going door to door selling these raffle tickets, he'd make enough money that the rest of the summer he could be a bum. And that was his, so he was gaming the system, right?
Was he going to raffle anything?
He wasn't going to. This was a total scheme. Yes, okay. It was a total scheme. He told everyone as he went door to door that he was selling raffle tickets for this great raffle in hopes that he would make all this money. But there was no raffle. Nobody bought a single ticket. So for one solid week, so he spent the money on these raffle tickets. And for one solid week, he walked door to door trying to sell these tickets. And the rest of us were just, we were so amused because it was like, bro, if you had just gotten a job, you'd be like $400 richer. But you put a lot of work into this and you actually ended up losing $40 for the raffle tickets. But we all know someone that does stuff like that, right? We all know people that are trying to game the system. Well, Proverbs 6 is all about not gaming the system. That God has created some systems, and what we need to do is not only not try to game the system, but we need to be on the lookout for those who are gaming the system. And it's going to apply specifically to money, work, and sex. So let's go ahead and turn to Proverbs 6, if you will. I'm not going to read through the whole thing and then go back and dive in. Today we're just going to dive right in and we will kind of jump through it as we go. So the first section here, verses 1 through 5, are about gaming the system when it comes to loaning money. So we'll start off in chapter 6, verse 1. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, and save yourself. For you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten and plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. So a lot of people have taken this section right here and they've applied it to loans and said, the Bible is arguing right here against taking out a loan. Don't go into debt. And they would take this. But I think that's a little out of context. So what he's really talking about here is actually being a cosigner. So in order to understand this, we need to understand that Levitical law actually provided loans for people, interest-free loans. So the Jews were not allowed to charge interest to other Jews, right? And so they were to give people who are hurting, people that were hard up, people that were living in poverty, they were supposed to give out loans. So they were supposed to loan out this money interest-free, and then these people were supposed to eventually pay them back. But there are some people that like to game the system. And they knew that that was the system. And so what would they do? They'd go out and get a loan here. Then they'd get a loan here. Then they'd get a loan here. And eventually, they'd run out of people that were willing to loan them the money. And that's when it comes to this stranger. So my son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, and this term neighbor really means friend here. So if you put up security, have given your pledge for a stranger. And this term stranger is kind of like, it's this foreigner who's come in, and they recognize that that this person has gamed the system and worn out all of their contacts, right? So no one's going to loan them any more money, but this person still needs money. And so this is basically the stranger here is what we'd call a loan shark. They're going to loan this money, but they're going to charge an arm and a leg. And they know they can do it because this person has run out of other options. There's no other options here. And so what he's saying here is if you've put up security for your friend is the sluggard. Your friend is the one who's gaming the system. And they've come to a place where they've exhausted all their other loan options. So this loan shark has come in. So if you've done this, if you've put up security, so this loan shark, not only would they charge an arm and a leg, but this person who's already gamed the system doesn't have a whole lot of interest, or sorry, collateral, we should say. They don't have a whole lot of collateral. And so the loan shark would say, well, you need a co-signer. And so your friend might come to you and say, hey, I need this loan. I'm really hard up. I'll make it up to you. Can you please be a co-signer? Put up your house so that I can get this loan. Now, this is a warning against that, about putting up loans or co-signing for a loan for someone who's out trying to game the system. So we see if you've put up the security. So you've already done it. You've given your pledge for a stranger. So you've already done it. If you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth. And so you've already given up this, you've already co-signed for this person. Then do this, my son, and save yourself. So first of all, this is a warning about co-signing for this person. Now, that doesn't mean that we should never go into debt. That doesn't mean that we should never co-sign. It means specifically for this person who's already exhausted all of their other contacts. This person who has tried to game the system. This person needs to feel the consequences of gaming the system. And there are consequences to gaming the system. But if you've done this, if you've already done this, then this is what you should do to save yourself. For you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten. And this word hasten really means humble. And plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. And what he's saying here is, you've been caught in this trap. You need to go and do everything you can to get out of this trap. Go plead with your neighbor to get out. Go plead with the loan shark to get out. Work as hard as you can. Humble yourself and get out of this trap. Do not play around with this trap. That's basically what he's saying there. Then we pick it up in verse 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. And so here we're going to get into, so that's this warning of don't get involved with people who are gaming the system when it comes to loan. Now we're going to get, don't get involved with people who are gaming the system when it comes to work. So go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. And this term sluggard really means like lazy. And once again, we see people that are lazy that will put forth effort to game the system of work. God created us to be workers. From the very beginning, we were supposed to work. God created us with work in mind. There will be work for all of eternity. There's so many pictures of heaven where we'll no longer have to work. And in all honesty, there's a lot of people that hate that picture of heaven. And I think they've got an accurate view of it because we're not created to just be lazy. We were created to work. And so we're created to work, but the sluggard is trying to game the system so he doesn't have to work. So go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard, when you arise from your sleep? A little slumber, a little sleep, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want will like an armed man. And basically what he's saying here is when you are trying to game the system to be lazy, you will become homeless at some point. You can't game the system. At some point, your laziness will catch up with you. as much as you think you can game the system, it's going to come and catch you. We've been talking a little bit about, actually, not just a little bit, as we've been looking through Proverbs, we've been talking quite a bit about the idea of the wicked person and the righteous person. And the righteous person is willing to live selflessly for the good of the community. So they're willing to self-sacrifice for the good of the community. The wicked person, on the other hand, is trying to live selfishly. And they're willing to disadvantage the community for their own good. So here we have both the loan shark, well, the person who has taken out too many loans and exhausted their resources, and we've got the sluggard who's done the same thing. And both of these people have disadvantaged the community for their own good. And so both the person who has exhausted their resources and the sluggard we'd call wicked people. Now, I want to emphasize that because oftentimes we don't think of them as wicked people. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say all poor people are wicked. That's not it at all. The Bible makes a clear distinction. In fact, this word poverty here isn't the same word that's used for the poor. Proverbs recognizes that there are people that are living with poverty. There are people that are living without wealth due to circumstances. There are people that have had difficult circumstances. They live in war-torn countries. They are the sojourner, the person who is the refugee that has come across because they're just trying to flee the war in their own country. The Bible recognizes that and actually has laws concerning taking care of that person. That's not what we have here. This person that is living in poverty is actually a person that is self-inflicted poverty. Mm-hmm. And this is a strong warning to not take care of this person, because this person is actually being wicked. We've talked about this idea of shalom being everything working as God has called it to work or created it to work. The person that is the sluggard is actually robbing the community of shalom. Mm-hmm. Because they're willing to disadvantage you in order that they can remain lazy. And this person is not to be helped. They're supposed to feel the consequences of their laziness. They're supposed to feel the consequences of their exhausting their resources. They've gone out, they've had all the resources they've at their disposal, and yet they've exhausted them all. They need to feel the consequence of that. So it's important to distinguish between the refugee, the person who's living in poverty because of circumstances, and the person that has chosen that. Sometimes people need to feel the consequences of their actions.
And don't you think, I mean, we've seen this happen where when those type of wicked people are rescued or given another handout or another loan, that the cycle just keeps going.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So and
if you
so,
rescue
like,
them once, you'll have to rescue them 100 times.
Yeah, exactly. And the Proverbs speak to that later on. And in fact, we've seen that, like, there was this one lady that came to our church. She was homeless. And she wanted us to get her a hotel room. So we got her a hotel room for the night. And then she asked us, but what we really wanted to do, we had a program that we give money to that will help her get her back on her feet.
Equips her to get out of that cycle.
Yeah, it equips her. It gives her job skills. It'll give her a place to live until she develops those job skills, until she can move on. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to take her there. But she refused it. And she said, just give me more money for the hotel room. And I said, but don't you see, once that money runs out, you're going to have to...
back in the same spot.
Yeah, you'll be back in the same spot asking for more money. Whereas if I take you over here, they'll give you job skills. And she refused to have that. She needed to feel the consequence. And I don't know if she'll ever go. I hope that one day she'll go and get those job skills. But I don't know
sometimes
if she will.
Sometimes the most loving thing you can do for someone is let them feel the impact of their choices.
Yeah, to let them feel those consequences. Yeah. All right, so carrying on. So then we get to this idea of the wicked. So verse 12, a worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech, winks with his eyes, signals with his feet, points with his finger, with perverted heart devises evil, continually sowing discord. Therefore, calamity will come upon him suddenly. In a moment, he will be broken beyond healing. And basically what this is getting at is there are con men, there are people that pervert and twist speech. The con man will use distraction, he will use violence, he will use conflict to disadvantage others to their own advantage. And I don't want to get too far into that other than eventually this con man will destroy himself. So that's all the time we're going to have for that. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. Verse 16, there are six things that the Lord hates and seven that are abomination to him. That's simply just, this is not an exhaustive list. This is a short list. It's not exhaustive. Don't get too caught up on that. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. And basically, this is just a description of that wicked person who is willing to disadvantage others for their own advantage. I want to hurry up here because I know when we're online, the interaction's just not quite there. So we're going to finish up here. We've gone through the person who's exhausted their resources, the person who's the lazy sluggard, and then the con man, and the description of the wicked person. And then he transitions to wickedness within sexuality. And so I want to spend a little bit more time on this than on the other ones. My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart always. Tie them around your neck. When you walk, they will lead you. When you lie down, they will watch over you. And when you wake, they will talk with you. For the commandment is a lamp and teaching a light. And the reproofs of the discipline are the way of life. And so basically this is just a reminder to live with skill, to live with wisdom. And then he gives us in verse 24, the why. So he says two. So this is the why. Why should you live with skill? Why should you live with wisdom? To preserve you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. Now remember, this is a father addressing a son, but we could say the same thing for the opposite sex. So to preserve you from women, why should you live with skill? Why should you live with wisdom? To preserve you from the evil man. There are evil men and evil women, wicked people that are willing to disadvantage you for their own advantage. From the smooth tongue of the adulteress. So what they want to do is they want to seduce you. They want to bring you in. They want you to partake in their evil as well. They are willing to use you for their own reasons. Then verse 25, do not desire her beauty in her heart, in your heart, and do not let her capture you with her eyelids. And what he's doing here is he's saying she has made herself to look good. She has tried to make herself beautiful to lure you in. And I don't think we can read verse 25 without talking about pornography. Pornography is doing exactly what this is warned us against. It is trying to make it look beautiful to lure you in. Pornography is a $97 billion a year industry. Think about that for a second. $97 billion is what it takes in. They are going to do all that they can not to lose out on that money. They're going to try all that they can to not lose out on that $97 billion a year. Now, some people will want to justify it. I've heard people justify it throughout my years as a pastor. And so I want to just address this. In fact, I've got a lot of information here from Fight the New Drug is a great resource. So I highly recommend Fight the New Drug. And what they do is they do all the research for you so that you don't have to go through all of it. And they've got great footnotes for you. I'm not going to go through all the footnotes, but they're combining all the research into it. So I want to talk about how The pornography damages the individual, damages relationships, and then finally we'll get into how it damages society. So I'm just going to read some quotes here. I'm going to make it really quick. So, how it damages you personally. In one experiment, the brains of men were scanned while they viewed porn. And these are just direct quotes from Fight the New Drug. When neurologists looked at their brain scans, men's brains reacted to women as if they were objects, not people. So get that? When you begin to look at porn, your brain begins to change women from people to objects. So that's damaging to both you, because it's more difficult to have a relationship with a woman when all you see her is as an object. And it's damaging to her, too, because now you, people that should be loving her view her as an object. This is important because it is the process of dehumanizing a person that makes violence against them much more acceptable. And just think about that for a second. We are in a moment of Me Too. We're in a moment of women's rights, and we see that pornography makes violence against women more acceptable. And 88% of pornography contain forms of aggression against women. 88% contain a form of aggression against women. Did you want to add something to that?
Just as you get into all this, I think... I constantly hear society and individuals, real people that I know, talk about how porn is victimless, innocent, actually helpful to developing our sexuality in a good way. So these statistics are not coming from Christian, biblical, anything. This is secular research that has proven this.
Yeah, and that's good to note, is that this is not, in fact, Fight the New Drug continually reminds their followers that they're not a religious institution, that they are secular, and yet the secular research is out, and porn is harmful. Speaking of which, we will continue. Pointing to other studies, Dr. Ferbert further explains, digging deeper into this brain phenomena, a group of neurologists studied more brain scans of people who use pornography. They used an experimental design in order to demonstrate cause and effect. They found that people who use more pornography become less able to wait for gratification than people who use less pornography. Brain studies also now show that increased porn use leads to a slowing down of short-term memory. And so pornography use decreases your ability for delayed gratification, which is an incredibly important skill set to have, and it actually decreases your short-term memory. So pornography is, in fact, personally hurting you. But there's a plethora of other research I don't want to get into, but there's more to it than just that.
So it doesn't just damage you sexually.
It doesn't just damage you sexually. It damages your brain. And it actually rewires the way your brain works. So now let's get into relationships. Even if your partner has no problem with pornography. Even if your partner has no problem with you watching porn, it can still damage your relationship. Studies have clearly shown that porn erodes a person's ability to love and feel loved with a real partner. When men are exposed to porn, they rate themselves as less in love with their actual partners and less satisfied with their relationships and sex lives. And so people begin to watch it thinking that it will actually increase their level, their intimacy, or their level of satisfaction with their sex life. And it actually decreases your level of intimacy and decreases your satisfaction with your sex life. They become more critical and dissatisfied with their partner's appearance, sexual performance, sexual curiosity, and displays of affection. Ironically, porn is directly related to problems with attraction, arousal, and sexual performance, as well as lower sex drive, erectile dysfunction, and difficulty reaching orgasm. And so there's this lie that pornography is going to make your sex life better, and all the research shows that it actually makes it worse. That pornography will make your relationships better. And all of the research says that it will make your relationships worse. One recent study examined men who used internet porn compulsively and found that in 11 out of 19 subjects, porn consumption had lowered their sex drive. So porn actually lowers your desire for sex and or ability to maintain erections in physical relationships with real women. Oddly enough, those men were still able to respond sexually to porn. And so it actually increases, pornography actually increases erectile dysfunction. And so, once again, in relationships, it promises these things that it just can't deliver on. And then finally, society. And the one thing I'm going to hit upon, there's so many other things, and you can just get lost in a rabbit hole of research on how bad pornography is personally, in your own personal relationships, and within society. But the one thing that I want to get into, it's just going to be one quick quote. Modern sex trafficking shares a variety of symbiotic connections to pornography. Mm-hmm. So no matter how they slice it, sex trafficking and sex slavery has a symbiotic connection to pornography. They are intertwined. But it goes on. Oftentimes, they are one and the same. Mm-hmm. And so people think that it is a victimless action.
Innocent.
And yet, there are several people in those videos that are sex slaves, that are being coerced, that are being abused. And so here's the deal is, when it comes to sexuality, we think we can game the system. We think that we've found the solution to gaming the system. Mm-hmm. We've got birth control. We've got all these other things that we think we can handle or save off STDs. And yet, even beyond that, we think we can game the system by use of pornography. And we can just use pornography and there will be no consequences. We won't have the struggle with unwanted pregnancies. We won't have the struggle with STDs. And yet, pornography hurts you personally. It hurts your relationships. And it hurts society. Pornography is incredibly damaging. And so you can't game the system. God has rules around sexuality. And you can't game that system. So he continues on. For the price of a prostitute is only a loaf of bread, but a married woman hunts down a precious life. Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? And that is a memory verse that we've had for a long time. And whenever I read that, I just think of, can I carry a device in my pocket that gives me immediate connection to pornography and not eventually get burned? And I do encourage a lot of, especially younger males, don't get a smartphone yet. Right now, it'd probably be best for you just to have an old dumb phone. And I've known many men that have struggled with pornography, and there are so many of them that I know they haven't taken their addiction seriously until they get a dumb phone. And then I'm like, oh, they finally caught on to that. All right, so can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not get burned? Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not get scorched? And really what he's talking about here is, clearly you're going to get burned. And this relates to gaming the system with sexuality, but here he's going to get into adultery in particular. And the idea here is that if you're getting into adultery, if you're pursuing another man's wife, you're going to get burned. That's really what he's getting at. So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. None who touches her will go unpunished. And so that's what we get that. You know, you can't carry a fire next to your chest and not get burned. You can't walk on hot coals and not scorch your feet. You also can't sleep with your neighbor's wife and not get hurt as well. You will be punished for this. People do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his appetite when he is hungry. And so what he's saying here is that, you know, if you steal because you're hungry, people will understand. People will, they kind of get that. Everybody who is hungry and steals for a loaf of bread to feed themselves, we all understand that. We all might fall into that. And then he gives us a contrasting conjunction here. But if he is caught, you will pay sevenfold. So we understand if you steal because you're hungry, but you're still going to have to pay. He will give all the goods of his house. He who commits adultery lacks sense. He who does it destroy himself. He will get wounds and dishonor, and his disgrace will not be wiped away. For jealousy makes a man furious. And so here's that connection with that but. So we understand if you steal because you're hungry, but if you get caught, you're still going to pay. For jealousy makes a man furious. So here's the connection. We understand the hunger thing, but we're not going to have understanding, and we're not going to have sympathy for when you pursue your neighbor's wife. No one's going to have sympathy for that. No one's going to say, well, I understand you stole because you're hungry here. And jealousy makes a man furious, and he will not spare when he takes his revenge. This term revenge is actually a court term, and it means that he's going to pursue the fullest extent of the law against you. And in those days, the fullest extent of the law was death. There was death for sleeping with your neighbor's wife. He will accept no compensation. He will refuse though you multiply the gifts. You may be the richest man on earth, but he's going to get mad, and he's going to refuse any gift you have. He's going to bring the full law against you. That's the point that he's getting at here. And so what do we see this whole thing? We see that you can't game the system. There are people that try to game the system in loans. There are people that try to game the system in work. There are people that try to game the system when it comes to sexuality. And we live in a culture of a sexual revolution. We live in a culture that thinks we can game the system. And we think we've created new ways to do it. But gaming the sexual system that God has put into place is nothing new. Cultures throughout history have tried to do it, and the consequences have been devastating. And I think we're beginning to see devastating consequences of gaming the system with pornography. We live in a culture full of loneliness. We live in a culture full of pain. We live in a culture full of hurt. And so much of that is a result of trying to game the sexual system that God has put into place. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're sitting here today and you're the one that's hurt. You're the one that's lonely. You're the one that's in pain. Because either you've tried to game the system or someone tried to game the system against you. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell you, there is hope. Mm-hmm. There is redemption. There is restoration. You don't have to be a slave to sexual desire. So many of us, especially in my generation, almost every guy has struggled with sexual desire. Almost every person has struggled with sexual desire and having that sexual desire begin to conquer you. But I can tell you, and I've talked with man after man who was addicted to porn, but has broken free from that addiction. And it starts by confessing that addiction. It starts by saying, I have an addiction. I have tried to game the system and it has absolutely wrecked me. And now it is time for me to confess and to come back to God for redemption and restoration. And I'll tell you, when God restores you, you no longer have to be a slave to that sexuality that you thought you could conquer when you were gaming it. Mm-hmm. It starts with confession and it ends in restoration. Mm-hmm. And that restoration is amazing. Let me pray. Dear Lord, we thank you for restoration. We know that we try to game the system, that we think we can get away with it. And yet we know in the end it brings death. It brings pain. And we pray that you would help us, Lord, to confess when we try to game the system, that we would be restored, redeemed by you. In your holy name we pray. Amen. Amen. Thanks for joining us today.